When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, and welcome back to the Pants Party. It is Harrison Star, HD underscore Star, on Twitter, Ben Ross, RenVoss23, Harmon Chillabrew. One of us is still recovering from Vegas X amount of days later. Way more than I'd like to admit. How are you?
And the other one of us is recovering from a golf trip 4 weeks ago still. One that thrust him into physical therapy. So,
oh, no.
Which one of us is winning? I don't know.
I guess we'll find out. We'll find out in 4 weeks. Physical therapy, Ben.
I know. I'm so old. It's the worst. I think I'm hoping Friday will be my last session.
Okay. So is it like a wrist thing or
a corner
knee thing or?
No, it's my back. My back. I can't move.
That's brutal.
It's the worst. Yeah. My dad has a bad back. You know what I have to do now? I have to do stretches every morning. I have to get out of bed before I even have my coffee. I have to stretch for like 15 to 20 minutes.
It's good for you. Can you send me those stretches? What are the stretches you're doing?
And the worst is my physical therapist keeps on texting me and adding more. So it's like started off with 4 stretches, then he added 2 more 2 weeks later, then he added 2 more. I got a text from him today. So it's now like literally it's close to 40 minutes of stretching. I don't have time. I can't do this. It's like a whole, in addition to like the workouts I do, it's a whole other workout.
Yeah. It is. It is. Yoga's a thing, Ben. Maybe that's just what your... Does your physical therapist have, like, a yoga studio on the side just trying to transition you from one to the other?
Yeah. It's a little bit of a racket because he just comes to my gym.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's, like, incredibly convenient. So I just see him before, like, usually before I work out when I can time it up perfectly. And it makes it too easy.
Oh, that man's a genius.
I know.
That's incredible. That's incredible. I will say, like, being at the When We Were Young Festival, Ben, staying out past midnight, 3 straight nights. Brutal. It was brutal. I'm just not built for it. 25 other people aren't built for it either, because that's the number of people that we're missing on our 6:15 a.m. flight out of Las Vegas, which was a bold decision.
What were you thinking? Yeah.
Well, I was thinking we had to get back and take Elliot, because we dropped him off in Dallas, and then we drove back on a Sunday night. So, long day.
How long's that drive?
5 hours, if you take the direct route. I see you shaking your head.
Why do you take the not direct route?
Christina needed to stop, and we accidentally got on a turnpike.
At Bucky's?
No, not at Bucky's. And instead of taking the exit to the gas station, she took the exit to the Cherokee Turnpike, and there's no exits to turn around on this thing, so we had to end up just taking the long way around. It worked. It's fine. I just feel bad because she doesn't like driving in the dark, and she ended up having to drive 15. Now I was probably close to 30, 45 minutes in the dark that she wasn't planning on doing. But hey, I love you.
Shouldn't have missed the turn.
Take the correct exit. Not to be too much of a curmudgeon about it. But no, it was a fun festival. Like, I have to say, I think the All-American Rejects are what I'm going to take away from it, though. They were incredible. They played for 30 minutes, all bangers, dressed up like Elvis. He did a little more of an Elvis impersonation than I expected him to do for the whole time. And it It wasn't bad, got to say. And then Taking Back Sunday, Christine and I got disconnected, so we couldn't find each other during them. So, like, we were watching them simultaneously from, like, way back. I think he's lost a step, which stinks. But he also said he's been in Vegas, had been in Vegas for, like, 10 days. So I think you lose steps when you're that far. You're in Vegas for that long. And then the other weird highlight, Ben, was 303. It was a pretty fun concert. So definitely fun. Definitely saw some other bands, but it was good. Got some merch. Got Elliot a merch t-shirt, so he'll have that for when he grows up to be like 5 and can fit into a U small. But fun stuff.
Was this a strictly music trip? Did you do any gambling? Did you stay in a casino?
Yeah, so we were at the Cosmo, and my wife and our friend...
No free ads. Yeah,
aren't big gamblers. So, like, I also am not a big gambler, but, you know, I had budgeted some to you know, just throw into a couple machines and didn't even go through it because, like, you know, how much fun can you really have when it's, like, one person sitting at a machine and two other people watching? So it was fun for that. I mean, to me, the takeaway from Vegas is always going to be the food, just because you have all the celebrity chefs all have restaurants there and you can eat whatever you want and it's all pretty good, if not great.
Did you do any buffets, the famous Caesar's buffet or anything like that?
No buffet. I probably should have. We did this one restaurant called Super Freako, and it was called Italian American Psychedelic. And they would have, like, it was like dimly lit black lights, and then there would be kind of circus performers that kind of walked around and juggled or did stretching routines or flexibility routines, you know what I'm... So that was fun.
Tinder and a show.
I know. And then when Christine and I got right in, we went to Jose Andres' restaurant in the Cosmopolitan that was like Chinese and Mexican simultaneously. So we were able to get like a real good noodle dish, some great tacos. Christina had a margarita with like sea foam salt on the top. I call it sea foam. It was like salt foam, but it was good stuff. It was good stuff. And I think, you know, the big takeaway for me is like, I shouldn't watch any Iowa game because Iowa comes out and plays the best they've looked, in 2022.
Did you see any of the game?
No, I didn't. Okay. Like, I kept telling myself, oh, I'm gonna watch, like, the super cut of all of this. But
Have you even watched the highlights? Have you done anything?
I've read enough recaps to be mad about Iowa busting out the entire playbook against the worst team on their schedule. Like,
yeah, I want to talk to you about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's probably where we should start, Ben, because, like, I'm leaning on you for not the boots on the ground reporting, you weren't there, but for your takeaways while you were watching it. And like, to me, the thing that does stick out is scoring on 7 of their 8 drives. And that was something that Matt put like at the top of the recap. And I thought that even though some of them are field goals are failures, yada, 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 quote stats of war on that one. But, you know, 7 out of 8, Iowa gets that. Even if Iowa scores 7 field goals, that's 21 points and they should win whenever they score 21 points.
Sorry. They keep on changing where the mute button is on this fucking thing. My takeaway, I only watched the first 3 quarters.
Okay.
I went to a Halloween party pregame for the 4th. I kept an eye on it. They had it on there. My, you know, a win's a win. Let's get that out of the way.
Yes.
My takeaway from everything is Northwestern is really, really bad. I don't want to belittle any of the team's accomplishments, Iowa's accomplishments. You know, the defense played as well as they have all year. God, I think I read somebody's recap yesterday. So the defense didn't play stellar. Then the very next sentence, he said they had 7 sacks. I was like, by what fucking metric is that not stellar?
Yeah.
Like, that is true. Like, reading that, it's like, oh, because they gave up, I think, 350 yards or something to Northwestern. Is like, they scored 13 points. Like, oh my God, it's exhausting. And I can keep on going, getting into this. I think we'll get there organically. But it's like, you know, now the job is once again Petrus's for the remainder of the year until it isn't. You know, it really, I think Caleb Johnson emerged as true number one. Deontay Vines could become good. I like seeing a wide receiver with the number 0. We're never going to see Keegan Johnson in an Iowa jersey again. You know, it's just like, try not to, and I'm going to become more negative as this gets on, but it's like, you know, we did what we should have done. We did to Northwestern, yes, what we should have done to Northwestern. We also should have done this to South Dakota State. We probably should have done this to Iowa State too,
yeah,
with the way the season shake out. I'm going to get into that in a little bit, but you know, those are my quick hits.
Yeah. I don't want to speak too out of turn, but like, I'm with you. Like, I was not keeping up with Twitter or anything during the game, but there was one point where there was a little bit of a lull and I got on the Bird app and someone's like, oh, for the 5th sack of the game, Lucas Van Ness or whatever. And I see like the timestamp of it and it's in the second quarter. And it's like, to your point, like the defense could play better, but also they couldn't play better. And I think that the sack number is kind of interesting because the line of demarcation that Mark Morehouse had always used was if Iowa gets to 30 sacks, that is a pretty good indication of just how good the team is. And they're at 21 now. So like 4 more games left. Can they get another 2 per game plus presumably a bowl game? Cause I think I'm amongst the most negative of fans that thought, hey, it's Fitz. He's going to figure out a way. I was not going to put enough distance between, them and the Wildcats, but they did. And to your point, like as I kind of was talking to my dad earlier this week, I don't want to belittle it, but to me, is this the high point of the season, or is it going to be a jumping off point for the rest of the season? Because as important as that win was, it was just one win. They need to get 2 more to get to a bowl. I mean, I think everyone's got Nebraska penciled in as one, but, and maybe increasingly Minnesota. So getting to that 6 number looks reasonable, but there's even a shot that Iowa wins the West from behind at this point, undeserved. And, you know, if it's that jumping off point, I think people will feel a lot better about the season at large, especially if the offense can put up even 24 to 33 points over the next 4 games. But if it's, oh, the most points Iowa scored in a game this year was 33 in a one-off game against Northwestern, and every other game they were, you know, below 24 outside of
on homecoming too. That's important, yeah, to consider too, on homecoming.
Yeah,
at home. So that leads me into me pissing into the Cheerios, yeah, and being grumpy, I think, for a while here.
Okay.
Would you be happy, and I'm going to preface a tirade with this question, would you be happy with an 8-win season this year? Iowa goes on and wins out.
I had them at 7, so to me it would be okay, exceeding expectations, but that was under the assumption that the offense would be a little better.
So, there's a tweet, and I pick on him a lot, and that's mainly because he's the only guy who I pay to read on the Iowa beat.
Right.
But Scott Docterman had a tweet on Monday or Sunday after the game, the 31st, whatever day that was. Iowa ruined a few weekends by not playing poorly enough against lowly Northwestern and validating their desire to complain. Lucky for them, there's always next weekend against a better opponent. Eight thoughts from Iowa 33-13 win. That is the most shrimp-dicked, fucking out-of-touch tweet I've ever read in my entire life. Furthermore, let me go on. He responds to the tweet. If I had a Twitter poll where if 4-8 meant getting rid of Brian and 8-4 meant keeping him, there are plenty that would root for 4-8. I have a question. What would you, I know I just asked you, would you be happy with 8 wins?
Yeah.
What would you prefer? An 8-4 season where we keep Brian or 4-8 where we fire him?
I mean, it's a toss up to me. It's a toss up to me. Like,
here is what, let me just run down. Here is what an 8-4 season where keeping Brian has gotten you. It got you 7 points against South Dakota State.
Yes. 3, actually.
Win. You're right. It got you 3 points in a 7-3 win over South Dakota State. It got you 10 points, or excuse me, got you 7 points in a 10-7 loss to Iowa State. First time you lost to them in 6 years. It got you 6 points in a 9-6 loss to Illinois. Your first loss to Illinois in 8 years. Iowa's longest active winning streak against any opponent. And then what 8 wins will continue to get you, it'll get you a win over Purdue, which a very down Purdue team, I think we can agree on, even though they have all these offensive weapons.
Potentially, yeah.
It will get you a win over Wisconsin, who fired their coach midseason. It will get you a win over Minnesota, who's playing with either their backup or their third string quarterback and their number 2 wide receiver. And who knows about Muhammad Ibrahim, how he's going to be healthy in late November. And then finally, a win over Nebraska, I think it's another 8 win streak, who also fired their coach midseason. What about those 8 wins is satisfying? What about those 8 wins is like, yes, give me more of that. And I don't want to compare. I'll let you react and then I'll continue.
I think the nature of the next 4 wins is the most important 4 game stretch of Kirk Ferentz's tenure. I just genuinely believe it because I think everyone kind of had in their mind that the first 7 games of the schedule was going to be potentially a bloodbath. I don't think anyone saw necessarily the Illinois game preseason playing out as gnarly as it did. I would have expected that game in the teens. I would have expected Iowa State to be in the teens. And to your point, I would have expected, you know, Iowa doing what they did in Northwestern against South Dakota State. But if by some grace of whatever happens, Iowa gets to 8 wins and looks, like I said, with this past game as a jumping off point versus the high point, I think you take it, but I'm not, that's why I don't gut sign up for the 8 wins, keep Brian for next year, because we've seen the best and the worst of Brian as an offensive coordinator over the last 6 years, and you see the worst of it so much more. And I will say I am sick of riding an elite defense, which Iowa has done for the last 2 seasons. I will say a third if you count 2019, probably a fourth if you count 2020, if you want to. So at least 3 out of the last 4 years, probably 4 straight years. And to me, it's a dereliction of duty to not leverage such the high floor that Iowa has by virtue of their defense and trying to shoot the moon. Like, that's to me, it ultimately comes down to Kirk Ferentz does not truly have, like, national goals. And I think that people like you and me, and I think plenty in the fan base that would prefer the 4-8. No, people prefer not having the offensive coordinator that Iowa currently has. And if the cost of that is 4-8, to get rid of it and to see Iowa try and achieve more by virtue of an offense that pulls its weight, they're willing to accept that season. It's not a preference. It's a, I'm willing to accept 4-8 if it means a change in how Iowa operates offensively. So that's why, to me, it's a toss-up, because, like, you know, like, I do think you look at 2019 through this season, it feels ridiculous that Iowa's probably only going to come out with just one West title, adding 2018 to it too, right? Like, I mean, the defense has been so good, the offensive talent, especially in 2018, 2019, to some respect, going 5 years with just one West title, and Northwestern, for as bad as they've been the last 2 years, getting two in those three seasons, it just feels like they win a lot of games, but they don't put themselves in a position to be nationally renowned like they could.
I'm so glad you brought this up organically, because the national thing, because this is the next point I wanted to make. I was listening to another college football podcast, and they had a guy, an Auburn beat writer on. And I think Auburn to Iowa is a horrible comparison on the whole, because Auburn is a special place, and I mean that in the most pejorative way possible. But the guy was saying there are basically unwritten rules for he was on to react to Brian Harsin's firing. And there are more or less unwritten, not rules, built-ins, requirements of an Auburn coach. And they're really not that lofty when they're spelled out. It's to beat Alabama once every 4 and 5 years, and then to split with Georgia and Florida about every 2 to 3 years. So just beat Georgia and Florida once every 3 years or so, and beat Alabama once every 4 years or so. Not the craziest thing. When you look at it and then transfer it over to Iowa, Iowa can't even beat Wisconsin once every 5 years in a row, let alone fucking Purdue. Just taking in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Taking those parameters in vacuum and lowering the bar even more would be if we had Auburn brain, which I'm glad we don't. I'm not advocating we adopt Auburn brain. We would be on coach number three of the last 10 years of the Ferentz era. And like, my question is, that such a bad thing? Like, to fucking reach for the stars and shoot for the moon, because the handicapping that we have over this, like, talk about going to the Big Ten West, to illustrate even further, we're 0-3 against Michigan in the last, since 2017, so how many years is that? 5 years. Where I believe, is it 1-2 against Penn State in the last three meetings? Is that right?
2-1. Two and one.
Is it 2-1?
Yeah.
Okay. And then 1-1 against Ohio State, which, I mean, honestly, you take that. So,
yeah.
I mean, whatever. We can talk. We didn't bring up, you know, getting embarrassed on Brian's resume, or getting embarrassed 3 weeks ago against Ohio State earlier at the top. It's like, you know, that's a given. But I mean, honestly, man, I am so tired of really this defeatist attitude and mentality around this football program and this offense and the coaches.
It's fascinating to me, because like, this is it. Kirk Ferentz hasn't leveraged his superhero in Phil Parker to take risks. He's leveraged his superhero to minimize every risk. And to me, the only way I can frame that is through self-preservation. Because he knows that the higher the floor, the easier it is to keep, you know, the neighbors at bay. Like, you don't have to worry people look like idiots. And like, I put myself in this as well. Like, we look dumb when we're like, oh, Iowa, another 8-4 season, get rid of the guy, because we know the constraints of Iowa football. It's tough to get Iowa, you know, really good Iowa, really good recruits to Iowa if they do not have some amount of ties to Iowa, whether it's legacy or in-state, being born and raised in
recruiting's the best it's ever been. Recruiting is the healthiest it's ever been.
Yes, and that's the good counterpoint, is recruiting is the best it's ever been, but look where what side of the ball those recruits are on. Like, I think I may have raised this last time. They're almost all on the defense.
Yeah, but if you can't tell me Cooper DeJean and Xavier Wankba couldn't be helping this offense if this team was a little bit more creative.
Exactly. Like, I mean, that's what I'm saying, is like, Iowa has leveraged their superhero in Phil Parker.
Hell, even Robbie Moss.
Yeah. Iowa could have, you know, Cooper DeJean could be a Division I level quarterback. But the fact that he plays for Kirk Ferentz's Iowa, he is going to be an impact defensive back for two seasons and go get paid. And I don't blame DeJean at all. I blame the structure within Kirk Ferentz's created Iowa football, where you take your freak athletes and you put them in relatively high impact positions, but not the most high impact position in quarterback. And when you, like I said, when you have a Phil Parker, you should be able to trust, oh, I'm going to be able to have a top 10 defense every year. Let's take a risk with Cooper DeJean for two seasons, see if he can make an impact as a quarterback. And then worst case, yeah, he'll go and be a really good defensive back for a year or two before going to the NFL. But they use what structures in place not to take risks, but to minimize risks.
I mean, yeah, we know that. It's just like, I keep on beating in the bush, where it's like, I'm not going to apologize for wanting to catch one of these East teams sleeping in the Big Ten championship. I'm not going to apologize for wanting to build a winning streak against Wisconsin for the first time of my Iowa fandom lifetime.
Yeah.
Haven't seen it. Haven't seen that yet. And not, I don't think this is the year we're going to start either. I'd like to beat Purdue. What? Like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Is, okay, you know, 10 wins last year, could have had 11 if you would have beaten fucking Purdue. Could have had 12 if you could have beaten fucking Wisconsin and Purdue. Like, the apple is there for us to bite it, and we're just fed a Big Ten West championship on a fluke that we had nothing to do with. Let me remind everybody that we fell in ass backwards into the Big Ten West championship, into the Big Ten championship game. And then it got played like a team that fell ass backwards in the Big Ten championship. Like, I am not going to take these moral victories and these 10-win seasons and these, you know, Kirk Ferentz lifetime contract things seriously anymore, because I look around, I look around and watch, I watch TCU. I watch I watch the Big 12 writ large.
You do watch a lot of Big 12. Yeah.
Yeah, because I had so much money on Oklahoma State to go to the playoff, and they just, oh my God, I've never seen a team more embarrassed. But it's the most, I think it's objectively, it's the most fun conference to watch this year. I kind of feel like Oklahoma and Texas got to be kicking themselves for leaving, because the amount of eyeballs on these Big 12 games are quite good. But I watch TCU, I watch Kansas State, I mean, previous versions of Iowa State even a little bit, but not really. And I watch Oklahoma State and Baylor to a lesser extent. It's like, why can't – if Iowa did any of these, we would run fucking train through the Big Ten West division. Nobody would be able to keep up with Iowa. And say what you want about the complimentary football and everything like that, the defensive coordinators for the guy who left Oklahoma State last year and I believe is now the defensive coordinator for
Ohio State
this year. Is it Jeff Knowles? Is that his name?
Yeah. Jim Knowles,
Something like that. Jim Knowles. You can't tell me that they we just wouldn't like any cult. And here's that's another thing too, is I feel like the way you take one you do for anything, you take one solution, another solution, and then you figure out how to make it fucking work. You know, if Iowa gets an explosive offense, the defense just you can't tell me that Phil Parker wouldn't be able to find a way just to make it to figure it out, to make it work. These are guys making $800,000 a year, $1.2 million a year. Like, you mean to tell me that, oh, if we score 44 points a game, like, we're going to give up 45. That is the most defeatist. Again, I'm feeling feisty, shrimp-dicked fucking attitude to approach this violent sport.
It is something weird that Iowa football fans writ large have bought, I think, up until this season. That
it's like we're getting it's like frogs getting boiled in a pot of water slowly.
Yeah,
it's all we've known for 22 years or however many years, and this is it. This is life. This is the way we've always done things.
Yeah,
still get a milkman, still get a newspaper delivered. Why would I change?
And the thing about the like. Here's where I struggle is you can't tell me the best way to protect your defense isn't to score points. That's ultimately where like I'm beyond getting gaslit where, oh, we need to play field position game, yada, yada, yada. The best way to protect your defense is to score more points than your opponent. And I think like here's the structure I've referenced multiple times, but the structure Kirk has put in place puts such an emphasis on the margins that when you do watch some of these other teams, like Purdue, I think am I doing a great transition? Purdue's a great example because they're one where their margin play is horrible. Like, they are really not that good on the margins in the three or four games that I've watched them. They tackle a little sloppy. They make really dumb penalties. They give up a bucket of points because, oh, they think, in some ways, they think that we have an offense that can go out and score again. And, of course, that comes, in some respect, from Jeff Brohm. He's always thinking, hey, he's thinking how I want Iowa to think a little bit more of. The best way to protect your defense is to score points. But it's this false dichotomy that you can't emphasize, hey, our goal as a defense is to shut out every opponent. You can still have that goal and have a different goal on offense, which is, hey, we're going to try and score as many points as possible. Because
that's what I found.
I think about it from the respect of, like,
Points not found.
I think about it from the respect of, a perfect game for Phil Parker is 0 points. What is a perfect game for Iowa's offense? Is it scoring touchdowns on 8 of 8 possessions? Like, or is it just not just going a game without turning the ball over? Because I'll reference him again because I think it's funny. He's like, too many times this season, like, Spencer Petras will have a 3-and-out and then just, like, jog on over, like, do his little clap. And it's like, okay, didn't turn it over, successful possession, got the hands on our best player. And it's like, you can have it both ways. Like, that's ultimately what I come down to is you can have it both ways. And the fact that Kirk presents football in this way that is counter to everything that's happening within the national landscape of college football. And he says, no, you can't do it that way. Why not? Why can't you emphasize offense a little bit more?
Yeah, I'm sick of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think
what more is there to even talk about it?
I mean, I think that's the thing, right, Ben? Is like that's your concern with 8-4, a hypothetical 8-4, which is my concern with a hypothetical 8-4, is that Iowa squeaks by these next four opponents in some various degrees, and we talked about it last week, and it justifies everything that Kirk Ferentz did this year. And then he can stand up at the end of the season and be like, you know what, we didn't have a full wide receiver room at the beginning of the year. Our offensive line took all year to grow. But we came out with 8 wins and gave us a chance, gave ourselves a chance at going back to Indianapolis. And, you know, 2 plays go a different way. We are in Indianapolis and we've got 10 wins. That's not the way it works, but that's probably how he's thinking about it in grand scheme of things. Like, oh, my process still works. And everyone that's employed by Iowa football can continue to be employed by Iowa football.
It's the first time I've really felt strongly about this fake ID of college football. Fucking moniker that I don't think keeps on coming up, but I kind of want to bring it back because it would be the week. Would it be the weakest 8-4 in all of college football? It would have to be. Truly.
I mean,
no wins over ranked teams, 2 wins over coaches who fired, 2 wins over fired coaches.
Yeah.
1 win over an FCS school.
1 win over,
like, come on.
2 wins over bottom 10 teams in Nevada and Northwestern.
I guess we'd have to wait and see, but like how many of those, I think by my math right now, the most wins we could have over a team with a winning record is 3. Or the most teams we would have wins over with a winning record would be 3.
Oh, that'd be Purdue, Wisconsin, Minnesota.
Yes. And then not counting whatever South Dakota State does.
That's a dark way to frame it, I think.
That's horrible.
It's this old Bill Simmons trope. It's like, is Iowa a good bad team or are they a bad good team?
No, they're just a bad team. Why can't you just be a bad? They're a bad bad team. They're a bad bad team in a dog shit conference. I guess you're right. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. 50% of 1 is still pretty bad. It's still a failing grade. 50% still a failing grade.
I know. I still haven't done the complimentary football scorecard, but like, I still come back to Iowa only has 3 touchdowns on Saturday, and it's like God's gift to the Iowa fan base. Like it's easy for me to have not seen the game, not witnessed this live, not enjoyed it as other fans enjoyed it, but it's just like you step back and it's like, huh.
You're,
not even 400 yards, 7 yards per pass.
Yes,
barely 5 yards per carry.
Iowa scored 3 touchdowns against Northwestern. You know who scored more? Maryland. They scored 4. Wisconsin. They scored 6. Southern Illinois. They scored 4. Duke. They scored 4. Nebraska. They scored 4. All those teams scored more touchdowns against Northwestern than Iowa did, and we're all fucking super happy about that. Furthermore, let's see.
Illinois. Did you get Southern Illinois?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Southern Illinois. Nebraska. Or let's see, excuse me. Nebraska had 465 total yards against Nebraska. Nebraska had 465 total yards against Northwestern. Iowa had 398. Duke had 461 total yards. Penn State had 360. Wisconsin had 515. Maryland had 423. Like, let's not pretend like I was, even compared to its peers and lessers, this performance was anything special. It was special because we've been eating dog food all year, and we just got served ground turkey, the worst of the ground meats.
Yeah, I mean, it's, as I said from the jump, this is either going to be the starting point for the rest of the year, or it's going to be the high point of the year. I don't think there's any in between, and that's like, that's what makes the game against Purdue so interesting, is it's beating Purdue in some way would be like, oh, and this is maybe counter to your point because we should always be beating Purdue in I think your head, or at least we shouldn't be 1-5 against Jeff Brohm. But if Iowa notches a win against Purdue, you're still thinking, well, 8-4 still isn't much. Like, is that kind of where your head's at, where it's like, or does it?
It depends on how they beat. It depends how they beat Purdue, but it's like, I don't think there's any way they reach 8-4 just because. I mean, maybe they beat Purdue. There's no way they beat Wisconsin. Minnesota is kind of a toss-up. It depends on their health. I think if they have Mohamed Ibrahim, and no matter how good the defense is, if they have Tanner Morgan and Mohamed Ibrahim, there's no way we beat Minnesota. And then Nebraska, end of the year, that's, I kind of think we beat them, but that's not a given anymore.
It's just such...
Basically, I'm there's no way I can find happiness.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
the only way I can find really happiness is, like, they run the table and make it the Big Ten championship, and then they upset Ohio State or Michigan and knock the Big Ten out of the playoff. I would love that.
I mean, I've had this take for the Big Ten. I think they're getting two teams in. And so I think...
I don't think so.
Whether Ohio State or Michigan loses to Iowa, I think the other one would still get in.
The SEC gets three before the Big Ten gets two.
But yeah, I mean, like, I think that ultimately where I'm thinking is that the thing about this defense is I just, at this point, they are too good to get boom roasted by Jeff Brohm again. Like, there is no weak point on this defense, which is famous last words, that can be exposed by a team that isn't a Death Star. But I will say, like, the Big Ten Network chose violence this morning on Twitter and put together a David Bell supercut. And the thing that does concern me is what was most impressive about Ohio State is how great their wide receivers were in terms of catching the ball. But CJ Stroud, every one of those throws that he had to make in like the third and fourth quarter, they were perfect throws. And they needed to be perfect. And seeing that David Bell supercut, it reminded me, crap, Purdue has quarterbacks that can make really, really good throws. And that's always why I'm going to be scared when Iowa plays Purdue. Just because it's... With Jeff Brohm's Purdue, they're going to have quarterbacks that can make those throws. And it's like watching a different sport because Iowa does not have quarterbacks that can make those throws.
You're right. I mean, different sport. I said it again.
Is there anything else?
I said it before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do have one more gripe.
Okay.
I want to bring up.
Okay.
And we're going to keep on ragging on him. If he, my DMs are open, Scott. He wrote another article, another piece. Iowa's use of jet sweeps, major focal point.
Yes.
Did you not write this in the off season? Did you not write this exact same fucking story?
I have been.
Leading up the season or early in the year?
I have been.
Or somebody else on staff did?
It might have been Thad, or it might have just been Slack conversations. I have been so aghast with Iowa's lack of use of jet sweep up until this week. That's why I view it as like a kitchen sink game. Because it's like, oh, this is finally Iowa thinks they can expose a defense using jet sweep. Why is it not a base part of the offense? Why is it not a base part of the offense? Because in what Docterman writes, he's saying, or people are saying, yeah, it forces hesitation on the defensive line and in the defensive backfield. And it's like, for a young line like Iowa has, you should be trying to scrape every advantage you have every single play. And obviously you can't do jet sweep every single play, but you should be doing it enough that you're causing hesitation and helping your base offense have success. Like, the thing that he had written, I think, in it was it might have been Hawkeye game film. He said Iowa's most successful rushing plays were just straight inside-outside zone. The easiest way to have success with inside and outside zone is to make the defense think in ways that inside and outside zone don't necessarily force defenses to think. They can overload it. So, yeah, it's infuriating that Iowa is like, oh, finally runs a bunch of jet sweep, as if we didn't think jet sweep could help this offense this whole season, and now it'll probably be shelved. Like, am I going to count? Am I going to chart while I'm at the game? Oh, jet sweep, jet sweep, jet sweep. Maybe. Maybe I will.
Yeah, so you still are going to the game?
I am. I am indeed.
My God.
I know. I have no idea what it's going to be like. I have no idea what I'm going to wear. Do I go wolf in sheep's clothing? Maybe. But maybe I just go with a black and gold windbreaker and make people think.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the way
to do it. Second guess them.
Yeah. But it's... I don't know, Ben. Like, this Purdue team, they are exactly like every other Purdue team. And that concerns me. Do we want to talk about any Charlie Jones discourse?
I'm sick of it. I mean, it's not that by itself. Again, assessment should be another reason. Like, honestly, dude, I just can't stop going back to the Docterman tweet about how fans were cheering for a loss. And it's like, no, we're not cheering for a loss. We're cheering for, what's the word? Accountability. I'm serious. Like, dude. And then Kirk's quotes even doubled down on, like, them being okay with Charlie Jones leaving this week. It's like, Purdue identified in 20 minutes what they had in Charlie Jones, what you couldn't in 3 years. Like, again, that is the accountability. I want some punishment. I want blood. I want scalps. I want competent, good, fun football. Like, that isn't a lot to ask for. I don't feel like I'm Auburn braining this. I don't feel like I'm belittling past accomplishments. I don't feel like I'm being greedy. I feel like I'm fucking right because I am. Like, I think I'm being objective, and I think what I'm asking for isn't a lot. Truly.
Here's something funny. When you say you want fun football, I go back to the Rutgers game that I was watching in Fort Myers. And the most fun that was ever being had was when Iowa defenders had balls in their hands. And that... your team should not be most electric when your offense doesn't have the ball. So I think you're totally fair and be like, I want Iowa football to just be fun. Because we're entering this new world where simultaneously, like, certain things are going to be more achievable while other things are going to be less achievable. I think the Big Ten, it's going to take a miracle, I think, for Iowa to win a Big Ten championship from 2024 onward, when USC and UCLA come into play. But it's not inconceivable to think that Iowa can be the third or fourth best team in the Big Ten and be that 10th or 11th team in a playoff. But you're not going to get in a playoff unless you are playing, in some respect, fun football, because at the end of the day, the college football playoff is a television game or a television series that network executives have to put together, and whether your team is fun to watch is going to matter. And if you can't score like Iowa hasn't done for 4 years, they haven't had a competent offense since 2018 when Iowa had two first-round tight ends. A lot to ask. In college football, you're probably not going to get into the playoff, even if you may be deserving, because there will be too many things to pick apart if you are that unbalanced.
That's the biggest knock against Georgia, the number three team in the country, reigning national championship. The biggest knock is on offense, their two number one targets are tight ends. Like, and they've got... they have one of the best defenses in the country. They have a competent head coach, and they just are decimated across on the receiving end of things. But it's like, that's the biggest knock is, oh, you can't win a national championship when your number one and number two targets are tight ends. But it's like Brock Bowers, and I can't remember the other guy's name. I mean, they're freaks. I mean, they're two. It's TJ Hawkinson and Noah Fant 2.0 over there. But I think Georgia's going to be able to find a way to figure it out, whereas Iowa can't.
Yeah. That was fun, Ben. That was fun. I could tell you came in hot, and I think you were at a full boil.
We're supposed to. This is what happens when I actually prepare, is I get, this is why I don't prepare all the time, because I get mad when I do my own research. I just read things and get angry.
Ah, man. Yeah. I'll probably watch the game on my way to West Lafayette. That's what I'm going to do. I'll probably be like, okay.
You mean the Northwestern game?
Yeah. Time to settle in.
Tennessee.
The West Virginia game. Ooh, basketball minute, Ben. You want to do a basketball minute?
Yeah, we can only do 1 minute because I'm getting called at work.
But. Oh, okay. All right, so basketball minute. I think Tony Perkins is the most important player on this team by far.
So he's a point guard?
That's what it looks like.
Okay.
And I can imagine that it might shift with Ulis when he's back, him and Perkins being combo guards. But to me, Tony Perkins, if he's going to be like an 18-point scorer, he had 24 against Truman State. The ceiling on this team might be the highest it's ever been. And I hate saying that.
I mean, that's great.
I hate saying that, Ben.
That's great. Did I read? I had to double check. Was Connor McCaffrey was 4-for-4 on threes and not Pat?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
4-for-5. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is Connor going to be the sixth man, or is Bowen going to be the sixth man?
I think it'll be Connor. If Connor's a 40% 3-point shooter, has the assist to turnover thing, the kid's going to push for sixth man of the year, and I know it's going to make you angry. That's my prediction. If he gets close to 10 points, 40% shooter, get ready for it, man.
I'm so ready. I can't wait.
It's just like watching a tonic. Alrighty, man.
So you're not, last question, I gotta go. You're not scared, I guess it's too early to tell, but it's not a question. I'm still concerned about the lack of a true five on this team, and I think it's going to really hurt us, but.
It'll hurt in certain games, but you're exactly right.
Yeah, when it matters in March, yeah.
That Philip Robracha is, maybe he's the most important, because he is the wall protecting us from. He's the wall protecting the North from the guys behind him.
The White Walkers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we'll talk more about, when do they play this week next?
They when play the 7th, play next? So Monday.
Oh, okay.
I think
is that the first game of the year? Or is it still an exhibition?
Yeah, no, real game.
Who is it?
Bethune-Cookman.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds fake.
It does. Alrighty. Well, my friends.
Okay.
Pleasure as always.
Fuck State.